everyone. Welcome to the Cultivate Podcast with the Grove Church. I am Charlie Lofton, the lead pastor there, and thank you so much for joining us. And we have here with us expert producer, question asker, general creative.
Thank you.
Abigail Bloom.
Good to be here. Excited to be back for this one.
I know. You've done a great job.
Thank you.
We've done these a couple times where Mark and I will discuss something for a few episodes, and then you come in with a bevy of questions.
Yes.
So we're doing that again. And if you've been joining us the last few episodes, we spent some time talking about the existence of God, the problem of evil, and we did that for three episodes. We talked about those things. And so we're going to take some time and ask some questions. And here's the thing. I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
The very first time we did the Q&A, you sent them to me on email the night before, and I read them.
Yeah.
The second time, you showed me a printout of it right before we recorded.
This time,
I have nothing.
Nothing.
I have nothing.
Yeah.
It could just be a series of really bizarre would you rathers.
I should do that sometime.
I have no idea what's coming. So
right.
I'm going to hand it over to you with whatever questions you may have there.
This one for sure, I would say, falls into more of like the philosophical questions of life, which seems like more of the series that y'all were doing.
Right, for sure.
Yeah. And I don't know if you mentioned it in the earlier episodes, but this is all in correlation with a sermon series that you did. And people can go back into the podcast as well and find all of those sermon series to follow along with what you're saying on Sunday morning.
Yeah. So wherever you found this podcast, you can also, also on that are our sermon series. And so do the sermon first, I would say.
Yes.
About who, you know, does God exist? And then you can do the podcast follow up that Mark and I did. And then the Q&A.
And go into an endless trove of questions.
Just keep digging.
There's always more questions to be asked.
Always more questions.
Always more questions.
I've known you long enough to know that there are always more questions.
Yes.
Yep.
So I honestly really like this series. This is the kind of stuff that brought me to the point of working through these logical steps to believe in God and thinking this was a logical, rational decision to believe in God. And even listening to you and Mark go back and forth and you saying he's more of the experiential, emotional one, I guess you could say.
Yeah, for sure.
And then listening to you, I a lot more relate with your side of it of I need to know what this fine tuning argument is, or I need to know what the argument against or whatever. So this is totally right up my alley. So I already had questions locked and loaded.
I'm sure I could see you over there when we were recording. I could see you over there making your questions.
Yeah.
In addition to the questions I'm sure you've had forever.
Yes. Yes. And I had a couple of books, which I don't know if you would endorse these or not, but as I was digging into these and I got them back out this morning was Tim Keller's books, Reason for God and Making Sense of God.
Yeah.
And those, like, it's kind of like a master volume if you want to go even further into your sermons, it felt like.
Okay.
Like, here's all of the chapter titles, and those happen to be your sermons.
Well, there you go.
And then there's this bigger book. And then John Mark Comer has a book, God Has a Name.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's moving from the idea of God, but moving all the way over to the point of he's actually a relational being that you can know. So there's a ton of aspects that you hit on, but we'll dive in and see what we can get done. So first you said kind of a lot of different phrases. I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page of what those phrases are. So you said theist and atheist, which I'm sure everybody has heard a million times, but just for the off chance that someone doesn't know what that is. And then you said functional atheism.
Okay. Okay.
So just break down the dummy version of what do you mean whenever you say those words?
Okay. So we'll give you the whole spectrum, if you will. So there is atheism, which is you do not believe that a God exists.
Right.
An agnostic, people use the word agnostic typically to describe someone who isn't sure, but technically an agnostic would say, a technical agnostic is someone that says you can't know.
Okay.
It's a different saying than I don't know and it's impossible to know.
Okay.
And so that's what agnostic is. But again, the pop culture more use of it is someone who just kind of shrugs.
Yeah.
A deist is someone who believes that there is a God separate from the universe, but is disinterested in what we're doing.
Okay. That's where you get like deities.
It's from the same root word.
Okay.
So a deist, someone who believes that there is a God created separate from the universe, not entwined with the universe, different, created it, but has off on some other galaxy doing whatever he does, or maybe creating another. Couldn't care less about whether or not you get to your on your, you know, safe travels on your vacation.
Right. Okay.
A pantheist is someone who believes that the universe and God are the same thing. So there really is no distinction between creator and creation. So there is a spiritual element and a spiritual quality to the world, and there is a God, but he cannot be distinctly separated from creation. So when you hear someone say that God is in everything, that's typically what they mean. Not God is everywhere. But God is in everything. Honestly, a really good example of a version of pantheist. I don't know if George Lucas would want to push back against this, but the descriptions of the Force in the Star Wars universe. The Force is in everything, surrounds everything, binds everything, holds everything together. It is a impersonal force that exists everywhere, and you could not separate. If the universe didn't exist, the Force wouldn't exist, and vice versa. So then a theist is someone who believes, like a deist, that there is a God that is separate from the universe, but a theist believes that that God is personal. So he does care if you get safe travels on your vacation. He is interested in that. He is interested in the ins and outs of your life, at least to some degree. And so when I say phrases like a functional atheist or a functional deist, I assume that most people who would call themselves Christians, given a quiz of all the definitions and said, okay, how do you identify? We would all identify as theists. There are... aren't any real Christian atheist or Christian deist as far as their belief system. But functionally,
they live
like in the way that you live your life and the way that you think about your life, who is God really? So I mean, I've made this an offhand thing a couple of times. So you're about to go on your vacation, you know, do you ask God to keep you safe? Do you believe that there is a God that wants to keep you safe and that if you pray, it would make a difference? So if I said, Abigail, is there a God that exists and prayer makes a difference? You would say, yes, I believe. Well, does your life reflect that belief? You know, or does my life really reflect the belief of, you know, no, I acknowledge God. I know that my behavior matters, but I don't think he's out there trying to do anything. So I'm a theist, but functionally a deist. Or I'll go to church, but I live my life however I want to live. Functionally atheist. And so what is your belief? And if we just observed your life, what does your life say about, about your belief system?
So that honestly kind of prompts something further down that I had, that we're in the South. Technically the Bible Belt. I don't know if that's even a current, typically used word anymore, but
people still use it, but
not as beaten on. But we live in a culture that God is kind of assumed. You know, most of the people that come up to the University of Arkansas, if you ask them if they're a Christian, they're like, yeah, I grew up in the South. Of course I'm a Christian, you know,
I'm a good person and I'm from the South.
Therefore I am a Christian. So I actually pulled one of the quotes from, Tim Keller's book, Making Sense of God. And he said, a person's faith can collapse almost overnight if she has failed over the years to listen patiently to her own doubts, which should be discarded after long reflection. So do you think it's actually a vital thing to do to dig into these questions rather than just assuming? You know, he talks about multiple times in the book of it's no longer relevant to just believe in the things that you've inherited. We're kind of a culture that does use skepticism and all of those things. And so do you think it's necessary for any believer at any point, even though maybe they are fully convinced there is a God, to ask, why do I believe that?
When you talk professionally for a living, not only on a stage, but in a podcast, but in staff meetings and one-on-ones also, I can't always remember where I said this. So maybe I'm referencing something that Mark and I talked about in our Bible series when we were talking about epistemology, or maybe this is just something that I've said in other contexts. Regardless, I like to talk about the things that we believe theologically. I use an analogy of a house very often. And we talked about, I know we talked about in that the ground in which you put your theological house is kind of the religion that you choose, or your kind of the overarching belief system. So I'm a Christian, so I'm going to build my house in Christian soil. And then I have the foundational beliefs, the important beliefs, and this kind of the interesting beliefs. For a lot of us who grew up culturally Christian or raised Christian by our parents, the way that I like to think about it, by the time you're an adult, use the phrase, you've inherited a house.
Yeah.
So you've inherited a house from your parents. I've inherited a house from my parents. And there comes a point in your adult life where you're saying, okay, well, this is my house. Do I want to keep it?
Right.
If you can imagine thinking about it in a literal sense, you know, your parents die and they leave you their house, right? Do I want this house?
Financially, yes.
Okay. Well, then we'll go before we get distracted. We'll go back to the metaphorical.
Yeah.
Do I want this particular house? And a lot of people will do what's called deconstructing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna deconstruct, and they just start tearing all of it down. Really, before they ask what I think are the bigger picture questions of, is this a house that I want?
Right.
And I would suggest to somebody that I think it is really important, for what you said, to make your faith personal.
Right.
But I don't know that I would necessarily put it in terms of I need to, at a deep level, question everything.
Yeah.
I would start with, do I like this? Do I believe in this location? Is this a good location for a house?
Yeah.
Do I believe in a personal God who sent his son Jesus Christ to give us life? Do I believe that?
Yeah.
And I would start with that. And if so, it's like, okay, well, no, this is where I want my house to be.
Yeah.
And then to explore those foundational truths. Okay. Well, yeah, I believe in the foundational truths of Christianity. And then from there, now we're talking about remodeling and redecorating a house that you've been given.
Yeah.
I think some of us just kind of start going into your parents' house and being like,
new paint colors.
I hate this 70s carpet and these and this color scheme, and I never liked this couch, and you start tearing things up, and next thing you know, you've blown the foundation and you've moved someplace completely different, as opposed to asking kind of the bigger picture questions first. Do I like where this house is? Does it have a stable foundation? Now I'm going to take what I was given and make it my own.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we necessarily have to have some big, huge crisis of faith where I'm going to start from scratch and say, I don't know if I believe any of that.
Right.
I don't know that that's the best process, but I do believe there has to come a point where your faith that you inherited becomes your own.
Yeah. Yeah. So at one point, I believe it was in the first or second episode that you and Mark just did, you said, you think that our world today is outpacing our questions. We're too busy. You reference kind of like the same thing of grief, that we can just busy ourselves out of not having to deal with it, ask the real questions that we're really struggling with. So, A, why did you even bring that up? B, what do you really mean that we're, do you believe that everybody actually does have a yearning and a desire to like really ask the questions of is there a God?
I mean, I really do believe, and there are scriptures that point to this, and I think there's all manner of empirical evidence around this for people that live now and have lived for generations. We are constantly asking big picture questions.
Yeah.
Who am I? What does this world mean? What is my place in this world? Is there a deeper spiritual meaning to life? We have all of that in there.
Right.
But I think that a lot of us, maybe even most of us, are afraid of those kinds of questions.
Mm-hmm.
They're scary. And life is busy and complicated enough. You know, I'm still trying to navigate how in this economy, you feel this. You know, how to navigate in this, how does one buy a first house in this economy and the way the world works right now? And how do I balance my social life with my work life? And how do I just make the basics of life work.
Yeah.
And that's so hard and that's so difficult that I think a lot of us are either, some of us unintentionally, but I believe some of us intentionally are busying ourselves in such a way where we don't really have time to ask the bigger picture questions of life. And so I think the pace of this world is prohibitive in us asking those kind of big picture questions. In the same way, we can make this a not spiritual podcast and say, I think it keeps us from building deep, intimate relationships, be they spiritual or not.
Right.
The busyness and the stress and the anxiety of this world is keeping me from doing the things that God said are the two most important things in the world.
Yeah.
Love God with your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. I'm barely keeping my head above water. A drowning person is not...
They're not doesn't
have
party.
Yeah, doesn't have the capacity for that. I'm just trying to figure out how to get out of here.
Right.
But there does come a point
where
a drowning person would become very spiritual.
Oh yeah. Begging for a miracle even.
Right. Yeah. And so I think too many of us are waiting until that point to really ask the big picture questions. And I think a lot of us, when we ask these big picture questions in the middle of deep, overwhelming crisis, we'll come to the wrong conclusions because we're framing the questions poorly.
Right.
Rather than taking the time in a healthy, normal pace of life to kind of figure out, hey, I'm running really fast this direction. Is this even the direction that I'm supposed to be going?
Right.
Or am I metaphorically a dog chasing my own tail?
Mm-hmm.
Or just chasing some shiny object, but not really heading in the right direction. And so that's why I think it is important. I think that's why the Bible, Jesus, God, everything, it's so countercultural.
Yeah.
And it is countercultural for us to stop, to rest, to reflect, to love, to contemplate, because I got stuff to do.
Yeah. So that actually reminds me, I was thinking, Melanie in her previous podcast was talking about the Bible being countercultural and the things that Jesus says countercultural. Do you think people would also put in the category that believing the world is created by something is countercultural, at least in our country?
It's funny. I thought you were going to ask a different question. Is like, is really just maybe this kind of end up being the same sort of question. Like, is it countercultural to even have deep reflection? Is intimacy countercultural?
Is
connection countercultural? Is reflection, meditation, depth, question asking, pondering? Yeah, I think our culture is entertainment based, immediate gratification based, and acquisition based. And so anything that says, hey, you've done enough, or why don't you achieve less and connect more? Why don't you take the time to build a deep, long, quality relationship? When really I can watch, and again, I'm not taking a shot at any particular social media, but like an Instagram reel or a TikTok video, and get an immediate burst of some kind.
Yeah.
That's a whole lot easier than getting out of my bed or off my couch, contacting a friend and building a friendship with them by having lunch with them every other week and getting to know them.
Right.
And so I think our culture is pushing us towards acquisition and short-term gratification. And in that, then it's not that we don't, again, it's not that we aren't theists. We are just functionally deists and functionally atheists, because I don't believe that life is found where God has pointed it. It's not that I don't believe God exists. He just says life is over there and I am acquiring and getting short-term dopamine boosts.
Right. Why do you think that was a better question than what I asked. I really like that. Why do you think one of the biggest struggles or disconnects is that they can't wrap their head around a relational God? Because in that is... that's connection with other people, but even higher than that is you can't imagine relationship or connection, deep connection with a god. It seems so far off, or it seems almost like the watchmaker argument.
Right. I think there's a handful of reasons why people would choose or tend to think maybe that lend more towards either deism or maybe a functional deism as opposed to theism. I mean, the simplest pastory answer to give is people don't want that level of accountability.
Okay. Yeah. Someone that would actually know their life.
Right. I think some of it is wrapped up in something I guess is going to talk about in the next episode, which are the questions around the problem of evil. If there was a personal involved God, the world wouldn't look like this.
Right.
But honestly, I believe that there are some people, and again, I know some people like this in some of my small groups who think of bigness as separateness. If someone is big and powerful, they would not be interested in small and common.
Right.
I think that is a very American ideal. That's why you can make a series called Undercover Boss and it seems so weird.
Right. Right.
Why would the CEO be sweeping? Right. The CEO didn't even know or care. So we're going to create a reality show about how wild that would be. And so I think there is some of that. But honestly, I think one of the closeted fears is if there is a God who noticed, would he like me?
Oh, I think that's 100%. I'm
afraid that there is a personal God, and I'm afraid then if there is, he would necessarily reject me.
Or he would probably, the fear of he would tell me not to do the things that I'm currently doing.
Yeah,
that it would have some type of say that I didn't appreciate.
Yeah, that's the first thing. That's the first thing I said. It's like, I don't want the accountability.
Right.
But I think the maybe the photo negative of that is I don't think he'll like me.
Mm-hmm.
Like just in my heart that he'll, I know I'm struggling. And sometimes I don't love me. A God with high standards, I know he's not going to. It's a difference. I mean, there's a subtle difference there, I think, between a rebellion against nobody can tell me what to do and just kind of this deep sense of inadequacy that we have. And we just, you know, my parents, my teachers, everyone who's ever been an authority of it has always made me feel like they're disappointed in me.
Right.
And God is only a higher version of those things.
Yeah. It does seem like, though, America uniquely hates authority. And I mean, you can go large scale of really not liking the government implementing this or that, but then you can go all the way down to identity and not wanting your parents to control what they say about you, or not even wanting a certain name to identify.
Right.
Whatever you large or small about identity or authority over your life, Americans just hate it.
Yeah, I use this word a lot. It's primarily a political word, libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
A political libertarian is someone who believes in not just limited government, but just a couple of steps beyond no government at all.
Right.
Right? That each individual person should have the freedom to make their own decisions without government control.
Right.
And so in this context, when I say libertarian, that's just kind of what you're talking about. I think there is this sense of which I determine my own rules. I determine my own authority. God is who I say he is. Authority is what I say it is. And so I still want to believe in a God, and I still want to believe in a personal God. But because I have this kind of independent, free American, I am my own authority thing,
right,
I wonder what God is like. And it turns out God agrees with you about everything. And what you have done is not created, you have not connected with the creator of the universe, but you have created an idol, given it superpowers, and he looks and acts and thinks just like you.
Right.
And I think that's the connection that I see between kind of this American individualism, and I wouldn't say that's a rejection of theism. I say it's a creation of a false God. We do have freedom to, because we do have the freedom to explore and ask big picture questions, we reject anybody telling us or any authority that tells us who God is.
Right.
So I reject the Bible. I reject pastors. I reject theologians. Mm-hmm. And that each one of us individually can independently come to our own conclusions about this.
Right.
And of course,
you can. Yeah.
But that's not the same thing as being right.
Right.
Honestly, I mean, this is going to nerd this out for a little bit. It's really the Protestant Reformation run amok. Mm-hmm. We start to question, I think, in a healthy way, some of the decisions and the authority that the Catholic Church had at that time, and have ultimately got to the point to where you and I, when we could talk about God and talk about two very, very right. completely different people, you know, and different characteristics, different styles. And it's like, there's thousands of denominations, man. And even within those thousands of denominations, each individual person feels completely justified
in being different,
in determining exactly who they think God is.
Right.
So there's a thing like, there's a fine line there between, I want to make my faith personal, and do I have the freedom to determine who God is?
Right.
And the reality is, you don't. God is who God is.
Right.
No. The question isn't, who do you think God is?
Right.
It's, who is God?
Right.
And using the brain, the heart that God has given you, the relationships that God has given you, the one another's, the authorities that God has given us, to find the answer to the question, not who is God to you.
Right.
But who is God?
Yeah. Well, that even makes me think of, you know, I don't even know what you put it in, the funny thought of, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, does it make a noise? Mm-hmm. We do believe that even if there isn't a world created to receive God, there is God.
Right.
And so these people that kind of bump up against the authority and want to make arguments that he's actually this or actually that, they can do that.
Right.
But even beyond what they would intake from authority figures of church, pastors or theologians or whatever, God himself says who he is.
Right.
And so it's kind of coming in like head to head with like, well, do I want to accept that?
Right. And if I'm going to build my house in the Christian soil, mm-hmm. I mean, I need to recognize, man, this soil and these houses have been around for 2,000 years. Time. And for me to take a strong position about who God is that is radically different from almost every house that has existed for 2,000 years, there is a level of arrogance in that.
Absolutely.
That I don't know is uniquely American, but we may have perfected it.
We put it in steroids. And
right. I mean, the things that I believe, that we believe as a church about who Jesus is, about what salvation is, those kind of core ideas, obviously everybody thinks that what they're saying is what Paul said, but seems to be also reflective of the things that they were saying in the first century, second century, third century.
Right.
You know, the councils that came out to try to figure out, okay, who do we really believe Jesus to be? And what do we really believe about what ultimately would be called the Trinity? And who is the Holy Spirit? And all of these questions, man. They were wrestling around these things for a really long time and some really solid conclusions. And you gotta have a significant amount of arrogance, not just simply to disagree with the pastor you grew up with, but the historical norms of Christianity for right. almost 2,000 years.
Right. And I also was thinking, this isn't necessarily one of the, or this may be an argument that someone has leaned on or argued against, but it has been a theism or something outside larger than ourselves has been a universal concern since the world began.
Right.
Even in cultures that maybe weren't touched by the first church or by Israel, you know, wherever they might be, you go to the most remote island and they've created some sort of belief system because there's something out there that's bigger than themselves. And so I listened to the four-headed or five-headed horsemen that you were talking about. I listened mm-hmm. to their arguments and it never seems to come up that they question, well, why do people keep asking about God. And I mean, they're railing against God probably just as long as we've been advocating for him and right. believing in him. But along with the historical belief, you know, it can't be removed from human history that that's been a universal concern since day one.
Right. I mean, you got these, again, you got these early cultures and these isolated cultures, and we can judge them for turning the sun into a god or right. turning the ocean into a god. But there's something even in that of like the sun provides everything. It mm-hmm. allows things to grow. It keeps me warm. The ocean provides us with all of the things that we need. And you just see, wow, look at this thing is a great provider of everything. Right. And then again, I think our hearts are geared that way. And I think that God has also kind of put it in us to ask that next question. But where did that come from?
Right.
And so we idolize ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
God didn't make me rich. I made me rich. God didn't get this right. job. I got this job. God didn't get this degree. I got this degree.
Right.
So I idolize myself because I'm the one that is providing everything for me. One more question. Where did you come from?
Right.
How did you even get to be here?
Yeah.
To where you have the ability to idolize yourself? Where did that come from? Should you also be paying some homage to that?
Right.
Which gets us back full circle, and we'll kind of wrap it up here. This gets us back full circle. Like, I'm too busy to even think about it. I'm too busy and I'm too important to really ask these big picture questions, rather than kind of slowing down and being like, you know, who am I really?
Right.
And who am I supposed to be? Because I think in addition to us all having this sense in us that there is more to this life than just what we see, I think we also have this sense that something is wrong with the world.
Oh, yeah.
And something is wrong with me. And I think at that point, we start asking those questions. Where did all of this come from? And why does everything seem broken? We are just a couple of reflections away from deciding who Jesus Christ is.
Right.
And I remember some of our conversations that we had, that's kind of where we started.
Mm-hmm.
Where did all this come from?
Right.
And clearly something's wrong. Yeah. Once we come up with some answers to those questions.
Yeah.
Now, it's like, once we figured out the what and the why, then how do I find meaning in this world?
Yeah.
And then that's when the gospel of Jesus comes around. And so right. the people that Jesus was talking to initially when he was physically here on earth, they did not need to ask those two questions. They knew that God had ordered the world, and they mm-hmm. knew exactly why the world was broken. And so Jesus then comes in and gives them and says, hey, and I've got a hope for you
right.
beyond this thing that you need.
Yeah.
Right. Great job.
Thank you.
Thanks for asking those great questions.
Of course.
And we're going to keep this going for another episode and spend some time. We're going to keep talking about this. We're going to switch to the problem of evil.
You just made me think of like two more questions. Okay, so
we'll round it up here in a little bit, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about some more stuff around the problem of evil as well. Abigail, again, thank you for joining us, and all of you, thank you for joining us. Glad that you were a part of this. And if you are a part of the church, that's great. And I'm so glad that you're listening. If you're not, and there's some way that we could help you, serve you, help you get connected at our church, we would love that. You can find us at thegrovechurch.org. You go to thegrovechurch.org/connect, and you can find out all the details about what we're doing on Sunday mornings, how you can join us in person or online. Again, if there's anything that we can do to help you, please let us know. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Charlie Lofton, the lead pastor at The Grove, and have a great day.